listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a legend of the blues musician Larry McRae. Say hello, Larry. How are you?
Hey, brother Nikki. How we doing tonight?
Dude, first of all, I got to tell you, the first time I saw you play was at the Wiltern. You came out with a Flying V, and you just tore it up for the Allman Brothers tribute concert. And I was like, I got to know that guy. I want to know everything that guy does. I need to be friends with that guy, and I got to get him on this radio show. So it's such an honor to have been able to meet you, such an honor to be able to interview you tonight. Thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, man.
My brother, you don't know, it's making me very joyous now because, you know, what I see right now is a 360 for me. And about 30, 35 years ago, I was that same person, the same way that you are, talking to Albert King. And we were talking about that earlier tonight. You know, I used to aspire to be in radio. I was in radio for a while as well. So I did. It's kind of like deja vu. I did the same exact thing.
That's amazing.
It's such an honor to be sitting here for me talking to you, because I never saw myself quite in that position. But I've always worked hard to be the best I could be and to try to be as close to the tradition as I can, but yet to still keep it progressive enough to keep young people interested.
Well, what's really amazing, and I'm gonna give you a huge compliment. Like, there are so many people that play the blues and love the blues, but there are so few that really carry on the legacy and the spirit in the right ways. And you played two notes, and I was like, this guy is everything the blues is. And you even signed my CD. I was listening to your CD today. And you even signed it, Blues Power. I was like, this cat is everything right with the blues. So, you know, I was just very inspired by your performance. And, you know, you played a couple songs for the tribute concert. And I was like, I want to see a whole concert of this guy just shredding the way he does. Because you're carrying on that legacy of Albert King. You're carrying on this legacy of who you are in the blues and your statement. And you've had this incredible career playing with the Allman Brothers, Dickie Betts, Derek Trucks, Joe Bonamassa, I mean, Warren Haynes, you name it. Tell me what the moment for you was like when you first picked up the guitar, and who was the person that put a guitar in your hands and made you want to play?
Well, my story starts from a small town in Arkansas. And I was born in 1960 in a little place called Stevens, Arkansas, right next to a town called Smackover. And so
I love it.
I left Stevens and Smackover, and I moved about 30 miles down the road to a place called Magnolia. Hmm. So we were in the rural area. I lived between two towns. I went to school in McNeil, and going to Magnolia was going to Big Town. That was going to where you could buy stuff, you know, you could get shoes,
right,
you could get clothes, you know, that was going to town. Going to the store, and in the 60s, it was a big deal, you know, down there. So I lived through school integrations.
Wow.
I saw the death of Martin Luther King, right. John F. Kennedy Jr., you know, Robert Kennedy. Right.
Yep.
I lived through those times, and, you know, I've seen this country take on so many transitions and have so many perilous themes. Right. Although it haven't changed, the scenario haven't changed that much, the players change, but it's the same criteria it was 50, 60 years ago.
Right.
But the thing, what amazes me the most is that the big neutralizer has always been the music. The power of music have always been able to unite people when politics and anything else wouldn't do. You know, people would always come together in the name and for the sake of music. And that's why I think it touched me so hard. And I think that's why I feel so lucky to be able to share what I feel with people when you go to the stage. It's right. a special thing. And if you can connect with someone, if someone can feel you and connect with you through your music, then I think mission accomplished.
Did you have like jams, like family jams or like friend jams? Like who was playing guitar around you? I saw in your bio, you originally started with another instrument and then it was your sister, I think, that put a guitar in your hands. Or was
yes,
it,
yes.
Academy.
Well, I left Arkansas in 72 and I come to Michigan to just spend the summer with my sister. She had left Arkansas in the 60s and she had already established herself in Michigan. So she was 17 years my elder. It was like a second mother, really, but, you know, it was my big sis. And she would take care of us just like her kids. So I went to spend just the summer with her, and I was supposed to return home and go to school. Well, I never got sent back. Before it was time for me to go back, my mother had decided that the family was going to uproot and everybody was moving to Michigan.
Oh,
so wow. I never got a chance to go back. I never got a chance to say goodbyes to any of my schoolmates or anything like that until about 20 years later.
Wow. Well, I'm sure music brought you back to them, right?
It did. Music and family brought me back. Excuse me. But when I went to when I went to Michigan, my sister had been a musician already in Arkansas. And she had a four-piece working band. She was lead guitarist. Wow. And she played with the father of deceased blues man Michael Burks.
Wow.
Me and Michael Burks were kindred of the same spirit, distant kin, through a whole channel of a lot of, you know, Southern living. But, you know, we were cousins. We went as cousins. And Michael's father and my sister had a band in the 50s and the 60s. So Michael and I didn't get reunited until the 90s in Memphis. And everybody had been telling me, man, you got to meet this bad blues man. And he won the Albert King Award, and he's great, and blah, 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 blah. His name is Michael Burks. So it didn't dawn on me the connection until one day one of the Farn brothers, Laddie, took me down on Bill Street, and Michael Burks were playing, and we got to talking. And he said, "You Clay Mays' brother?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And I'm like, I'm wondering who this cat is. Who this boy know me, you know?
How do you know me? Right, right.
And he said, "You Clay Mays' brother?" And we embraced, and we was brothers, man, from that point on. And that was about 1991, somewhere along in there.
Wow. And were all these bands like blues, soul review, like funk bands? Like what kind of music was it?
Well, see, for me, I was a teenager. So once I moved to Michigan with my sister, I picked up guitar. My family came about 8 months later, 8-9 months later. It was less than a year and my family was there. So my other brother picked up bass. Wow. And my younger brother picked up drums, so we had a trio.
That's awesome.
So at the time, that was in the 70s, 70, 72, 3, 4, all along through there. It was groups like War,
Front
Back Band. Who else was it? I mean, it was pure soul music, soul and R&B. Prince came on later. That was later. Grand Sensation.
I'm wearing a Prince shirt, man.
See that? You know, so at the time it was Larry Brown, Sly Stone.
Right.
You know, Joe Tex.
Yep.
I mean, it was hard soul R&B. Really what it was souped up blues. It was still the blues, but it was funked out. It was soul. You know, James Brown had hit.
Of course.
Aretha had hit.
Yeah.
We were listening to people like Candy Staton, you know, stuff like that. So it was a rich Wilson Pickett. It was a whole,
my faves.
You know, it was a lot of great music, man, to choose from, and you had to be good. The standard was high in those days. So if you couldn't play, if you couldn't sing, the opportunities were even fewer.
That's amazing. And you know what? It's a testament to your talent, because I always think iron sharpens iron. So when you're around great talent, you're just going to be above and beyond most people just with what you're going to put out. So you started playing and you knew right away you wanted to play blues?
Yes, I did. Yes, wow. I did. And that was the funny thing about it. You know, when I was a kid, I was ashamed of it because the kids my age went into what I was into. But, you know, I came from Arkansas. So my people raised me on B.B. King, Albert King, Freddie, Albert Collins. Okay, but there was also Soul Side. That was Junior Walker was a big influence on my music. James Brown, King Curtis, Aretha Franklin. Like I say, Gladys Knight, Candy Staten.
All the legends, all the legends.
Joe Tex, Bobby Bland. Wilson Pickett again. Joe Simon. Joe Simon was a big influence. Later on, it was cats like Tyrone Davis. Johnny Taylor.
What about Guitar Watson?
Oh, of course, of course.
He's like one of the staples.
One of the staples and one of the slickest brothers out there that had some of the coolest lines. Nobody don't know how jazzy Johnny was unless you take the time to go back and check out his discography, like Half Past Midnight and stuff like that. You know, great tunes.
He's got great one tunes. Of these vocabularies that, like, a lot of players just don't have in that bag because it's just, it's very different. You kind of have that too. You have a very distinguished signature in how you play, how you sing. I mean, when I was reading about how you were playing on stages with B.B. King, it makes sense. It all makes sense. Tell me how some of those opportunities came about. Let's talk about Albert King first, because I'm a huge Albert King fan and a huge Stevie Ray Vaughan fan, and those two were so connected, as you know. So
right. Well, for me, in the late 80s, I got a chance to make my first record. So it was recorded. We started recording it in 87, 88, but it wasn't released until 90.
Is this when you got signed?
This is when I signed with Point Blank Records.
Yep.
So we had made this record, and it was in the can, but it was just a demo. It was supposed to have been a demo. And then we were going to recut and do, you know, blah, 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 blah. So at the time, you know, that got overruled and they decided that they weren't going to redo it. But you know how this, when it's your first opportunity, whatever the company say, you in agreement to it because you just want it to come out, man. So it was one of those things that it really was some trying times. I've had a very tumultuous career. But anyhow, we got the record together, and I had a choice to either continue on working for GM or to quit and to try to pursue a musical career. I got rid of the job, and I got out there and started playing. My first real gig was the Majestic Theater, and it was my band, Ronnie Earl, and the James Cotton Band, and Joanne Connor. Well, just so happened the Rolling Stones was in the house that night.
What?
And Albert King was playing that night also. So Albert King showed up at the gig with John Wooler, the president of Point Blank Records, and a couple of the Stones showed up, you know, in the limousine too. So my first performance, Albert came and he say, I hear tell that drummer's lazy on his rolls. You tell him I got some rotten eggs and some tomatoes that I'm going to be waiting on him to mess up over here. So I was a young man. I was probably close to 30 years old, and I had a Budweiser beer sitting on top of my amp. Albert told me, he said, nope. He said, you made your first mistake. So I kept looking around. I was trying to see, was something wrong with my dress? Was my fly open or something? He said, I played for 40-some years. I ain't never touched no drugs, and I ain't never take no alcohol. He said, don't never put that up on your stage and blah, 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 you know. So he was, Albert was always very critical, but if he liked you, he would talk to you and he would criticize. If he didn't like you, he wouldn't have nothing to do with you.
Yeah,
so I was one of his, I was one of his favorite targets to tease and to give a hard time. And I was told the V guitar too, in tribute, you know, kind of like a tribute to him. But really what started me to playing V guitar, my first national tour, I got a chance to go to UK and I supported Gary Moore's Still Got the Blues tour. And I went to about 60 cities in Europe, you know, opening up for Gary Moore. And so I went there with a Stratocaster. But when I hear Gary sound with the Les Paul and how fat and what girth he had, when I come home, I wanted to get me a humbucker. But at the time, I never played Les Paul. One of my favorite didn't really ring no bell. But I come home and I saw a Tobacco Brown V standing up on the wall. And I'm thinking, Albert King, Humbucks, this is everything I want in a guitar, you know? And I went with it. And at the time, nobody wasn't playing them except for Albert and Lonnie Mack. You know, Lonnie Mack was playing his V.
Yep.
But, you know, I was one of the only young cats that was toting one. And I fell so much in love with it, I never put it down.
Well, I'm going to give you a huge compliment because it's like, I feel like my favorite players and musicians, they always inspire me to want to play the acts that they're playing. And when you came out with a Flying V, I was like, oh, man, I already know this guy's going to rip, and he's going to make me want to get a Flying V guitar because, man, I mean, it just has a certain vibe. When you can pull it off, it has a certain flair and vibe just from the look of it. You can't go out there and not shred with a Flying V. You just can't because
it, the stars it don't look right. Yeah, you better bring something.
So I already knew you were going to shred, and you just looked cool, and then you did exactly that. So it makes sense that that guitar became your signature, and I love that you're paying tribute to Albert King because he's one of my favorite guitarists that has ever been. You know, he's one of the three kings. That's one of the kings. Tell me now about coming in playing shows with B.B. King.
Well, I met B.B. King in 1986, and that was down at the Majestic Theater. Also, during the late 80s and the early 90s, you know, that's where a lot of the blues shows were in Detroit, you know, right, at the Majestic. So B.B. was playing down there, and I went down there, and I got a chance to meet him and this and that and the other. And not long after I met B.B., then the record come out, and at this particular time, I got a chance to get on the same agency that he was on. And so by the fact that Point Blank Records was the hot thing for the blues at the time, I got pitched to do a lot of openings for B.B. King in the 90s. So I supported B.B. a lot, and I supported Robert Cray a lot in the 90s.
Wow, he's one of my favorites too, man.
Robert quite well in the 90s, you know?
I'm doing a blues trio record right now. We're just about to mix it. And one of the songs I'm covering is Old Love, which is written by Robert Cray, man. He's like one of the biggest and baddest, man. That's a great song. Yeah, so you opened for both of them, kind of like one tour with BB, one tour with Robert?
No, it was several tours.
Wow.
It was several tours. It was to the point that I knew all of BB's crew and the same with Robert's crew. You know, I'd be like, hey, man, what's going on? How y'all doing? It's really nice because I got a chance to meet and hang out with the King, man, and he was always gracious, and it was always something about just being around him, being around his aura, being in his presence, it was always teaching. BB was always teaching. If it wasn't on the stage, it was how to carry yourself and demand respect in the business, you know, just the way that he was. He was cordial and pleasant with everybody. But I have seen a couple times when that BB had to speak a different man. And, you know, that made me even respect him more, that he was so patient and so tolerant with everybody. But still, when people got outside the line, he would put them back in a way to not try to crush nobody or embarrass nobody, but to let them know that there was a boundary.
I met him once. Actually, I met him twice, but one time I had a real significant experience. I met him outside of the House of Blues. And this was before I ever played the House of Blues in Hollywood. And he'd played, and it was magnificent. I mean, it was such a great show. As you know, he always slayed. And all this random fog rolled into Hollywood that night. And I waited like for maybe an hour or 2 hours to meet him. And he came outside. He was wearing like a big, kind of like a furry trench coat.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been such a fan of you forever. And he pulled out a guitar pick. And he was like, well, you're a bluesman now. And then he gave me a little like a little chain and a little pin. And I was like, as if BB couldn't be cooler, just the chance to meet him. But he pulls out a pick, and it's I've got it actually hanging up on my wall. It's a pick of his face on the guitar pick, as I'm sure.
Yeah.
So that's
unbelievable. He was a pretty cool cat, though, man. He was a cool cat. Yeah, he was.
So you've got a guitar. You're holding a guitar. Why don't you play us a little something since you're holding the guitar?
Well, I'm just holding a Harmony acoustic guitar. I was just when I'm around the house, you know, I fool with this. Let me see. I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Dude, you just made my whole day. Thank you for that. That was incredible. First of all, I'm hearing all the chord melody stuff you're doing in your licks. I'm hearing great blues licks, traditional, your own. I mean, man, slamming. You are such
a slammer. I try to keep it close to the bone.
Oh, but that's the way it should be. We're going to play something real quick. What do you want to play us first for your videos?
Arkansas.
Here's Larry McRae with Arkansas.
All right.
Together round and sing our song. sun went down. I like barbecue with my coleslaw. Hey, way back home in Arkansas. Do it. Take me back, take me back.
Wow. I mean, that was unbelievable. You missed it, but I was booging the whole time. And then I was like, I'll be back on. Dude, it's got a New Orleans kind of swing and swagger. It's got a story about Arkansas, where you come from. Tell me what the inspiration was behind the song, because it is so badass, so amazing. You got Joe Bonamassa. I just met him 2 weeks ago, so it was just awesome to see you both playing on the same stage together. It's just perfect.
What a sweet soul, huh?
Very cool.
Yeah, Joe's great, man. And you know, he was you know, we met 20 something years ago.
Wow.
And I guess by the fact now that, you know, that time elapsed and things roll around, you know, sometimes you don't think that maybe anybody see you or notice what you're doing. But I had got to the point that I was ready to retire. I had been out here like 40 years, you know, trying to get a break and look like couldn't get past a certain level. And he really have opened some doors up, and good things are happening. You know, look, you saw me on the Almond Revival tour. You know, I did other work, you know, earlier this season, that spring, from those opportunities, you know. And so it just was really nice to see things finally roll around in my direction a little bit and have something to smile about in a musical career, you know?
Well, it's, you know, it's funny. It's, and you know, I've gotten through these highs and lows in the music world. And it's just like a nature of what artists go through. And the unfortunate thing is, you are a staple of what is American culture, because there's, I think the blues, I think the blues is America's biggest export. It's, you know, without blues, you don't have jazz, you don't have gospel, you don't have rock, you don't have soul, you don't have any of those styles. And I think the fact that you're carrying on as tradition is important, even when you don't think it is. You know what I mean? Because it's really easy not to sometimes.
You know what else that I have come to learn is that the blues music is the only original American art form of music.
Yes.
Jazz was an import. You know, all these other music come here from other places, but this is the only music that was invented here.
Right.
And, you know, it's very overlooked a lot. You know, it's most exploited, but, you know, the least rewarded.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. My plan is to do a movie about Robert Johnson, and I want you involved in the soundtrack, in the movie. I want you in the movie. I'm going to make this happen because it's people like yourself that live the blues, and that's what needs to be showcased because it is an important part of American culture.
And an important part of our history. And, you know, it's just like all the other art forms, you know, that we recognize through the Grammys and whatnot. Even when they recognize it and make the presentation, they don't even show a visual acceptance or anything. It's like a slap in the face almost.
Right.
Like, okay, you know, we gonna acknowledge you, but we're not even gonna show your image on face.
Yep.
You know, on TV. Even if they don't invite you there to accept, it could be a brief video acceptance, you know, so that at least everybody acknowledges the individual, and you know what I'm saying, but
yep.
it's nothing, and we don't have no representatives, and people like Joe who have the power that he have are the figures that we need involved because his voice is big enough to make a difference.
Yes.
If we could get three or four or five or, you know, multiple Joe Bonamassa's pulling for this music, you might see it blow up and become accepted the same way country music is.
Yep.
In this country.
I mean, it's weird. It's like it's accepted and it's very favored, but it's very kind of cliquish how it's favored. You know this because you've lived it. You've lived it longer
right.
than you have. And it's like, that's why I kind of see you as you're kind of like an American jewel in a lot of ways, because it's like there are so many artists that kind of come and go, but blues music is like this forever eternal art form that it changes styles and faces a little bit, but what it is a legacy, and it has to be preserved, and you've been a part of that legacy in a huge way, in a much bigger way than you think, I'm sure, just because the way you're talking about it and the way I see you, I mean, you are really a pillar of the blues in a lot of ways. Tell me about how you worked with the Allman Brothers, because I saw that on your bio. They're one of my favorite bands. I love
them. Right.
I mean, there's not a lot of blues I don't love, but I mean, it's just so cool that you've had your hands in all these amazing parts of the legacy of blues music.
Right. Well, you know, besides hard work, you know, it takes some good luck. And I got a chance to meet Greg Allman in around about 1991. Albert Collins was touring with the Allman Brothers. And wow. I had got in good with Albert. Albert
yep,
was, he was Gary Moore's walk-on guest, you know, for Still Got the Blues to it.
Yep.
So he was traveling without a band. I was traveling with my band. And he would hear us cutting up next door to him every night and warming up, cutting up, acting a fool and having fun. He said, man, y'all let me in here. Y'all let me in here. And he started coming over and hanging out every night, you know, warming his chops up before he got ready to go out and play with Gary.
Wow.
So after having did all those dates with him there, when we come back stateside, he come to Chicago to the World Theater with the Allman Brothers and Paul Cook, my deceased manager at the time. He took me out there to see Albert and to meet the Allman Brothers.
Wow.
And at the time, I was really kind of leery about meeting the Allman Brothers because it was a crossover for me, and they looked like they could have been some rough boys.
Very true.
So, you know, I've always been conscious of where I put myself, you know, but it was wrong on my point to assume that, you know, just assume by looking, oh, man, when I met them cats, they was the nicest people, some of the nicest people that I ever have met in the music business. And it lasted the whole time, you know, from that point until the group recently disbanded.
That's and you know what? You have Dickie Betts and Derek Trucks on this record, two of the greatest guitarists, along with yourself. And how did you decide who was going to play on what with this star-studded cast of people that you had on the record?
Well, I just kind of envisioned, you know, I'd always envisioned Dickie's guitar on that song on Can't You See? You know, I don't know. It just was, to me, indicative of their styles.
Right.
You know, what called for it, you know. It just in my mind, I could hear Dickie doing, you know, what he does, you know, his signature on that thing. And you can hear it right in the front with the pew, pew, pew. Those dropout bends, how he would do that. Couldn't have been about to do that like that, but him, you know. And so it was perfect. It was perfect for the song, I thought. The biggest thing that I hate about, you know, a lot of the things that I did in my earlier parts of my career, it was independent because I had a lot of things going on with the Point Blank label, and they were very... They were very strict and restrictive,
right,
in terms of the creative part of it, and wanted to control everything. And I wanted a little bit more freedom. You know,
let's call it as it is. It was completely controlling, shady, and not. It had no moral compass. The music business has never had that great of a moral compass, and. Unfortunately, you must have been tied down to a label that was very shady and unfair to an artist like yourself. That's unfortunate.
Well, they wanted to control everything, and so when I stepped back from that and started doing everything independent, then you know that threw everything on me.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, working with the first class producers, the engineers, and stuff like that, you know, if you don't have that. No matter how good a performance you have sometimes, if you don't get the right mix and if you don't have the right shine and the right buff on it, you know, you lose what you got. And I feel that right now, if I could take some of those projects and go back and have the proper help highlight and do the right mixes on it, that, you know, it could be a lot better than what it is. But, you know,
you still have all those tapes
with what we had to work with.
You still have all the tapes?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to help you with that. I would love to help you with that. I got a great studio. We'll have to talk about that. I got a great studio that is analog stuff. We can definitely talk about that. I would love. I mean, this is why I do these kind of shows, because I believe in artists like yourself, how you paved the way and been such a staple and pillar for musicians like myself. You know what I mean? So. I just really have so much respect for what you do. Any way I can help, I'd love to help. But I have a question. You've seen the music industry change a lot in the last 40 or 50 years. What do you think is the biggest change that you've seen? And what is the something that stayed the same throughout all that time?
Well, I think the biggest change that I have seen in the music business is how the there's no longer... record sales.
Right.
There's no longer a lot of cash generated from your records. You make all your money on your live performances. And other than that, I don't even know how you make money recording. This is the first time I did one with a label with distribution power. So I'm waiting to see how all these different things work. And that's the biggest difference that I noticed in how music is promoted. If you don't do social media, no matter how good you are, you at the bottom of the pile if you don't have good social media presence. And so this is something that when I started, we were always taught to stay off of social media because it was a gossip platform.
Right.
and so, you know, I had to change my whole way of thinking. You know, instead of running from it, now I'm trying to learn to run to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, there's a happy medium, though, because I'll tell you, you can't fake what you did at the Wiltern. You cannot put a video and put it out there without being able to do what you did at the wheel turn and have it move people, because that's what it comes down to. You can tell when there are cats that just don't have it and you have it. So when you walk out on the stage, you just know you're going to be able to play the way you are because you're just a badass. It's just the way it is.
You just try to learn to make your statement, learn to speak your language.
Well, I want to play something else. What do you want to play next?
Let's see. I have another track called Breaking News, and I chose this one because, you know, it was written during the pandemic, and during the pandemic, that's all we heard was breaking news, this, breaking news, breaking news, breaking news. They broke my back with breaking news, you know. So, you know, this song is a tribute to breaking news, you know, to what was going on during that time.
All right, here's Larry McRae with Breaking News.
Price of bread keeps rising. Groceries can't be found. The only cities that are growing are the California shanty town. Nation is in turmoil, fighting from the left and the right. The future keeps on getting darker, and I can't go to sleep at night. Breaking news in the morning. Breaking news.
confused.
You are keeping the blues alive with that one. Man, I was literally hooting and hollering during your solo too, man.
Woo! Trying to call on some albums.
Oh, man. You know what? I got to ask you two questions. First of all, I want to give you a first one, I want to give you a compliment. There are not a lot of blues artists that can write as well as you write. You write some great songs, great hooks, great melodies, great lyrics. They're smart. They're funny. They're fun. They're bluesy. They're soulful. I mean, it is really, I look at a lot of blues lyrics and sometimes it's got it, sometimes it doesn't. You got all the right amount of swamp, swagger, and just sophistication that makes it so great. So thank you.
You know what? I owe a lot of that to my girlfriend because she helped me a lot with lyrics. And
that's awesome.
We make a good team because she feed me different things, and sometimes, you know, all I need is just a spark to get started.
Yep.
And it goes like that. So for whatever it is, for however it works out, we do good together. And sometimes she can come to a spot and I can help get her past something. Sometimes I get stuck on something and she can get me out of a rough spot, but it keeps it flowing and it makes it a lot of fun too. And it gives us something to do, but I just, for so long, tried to find other musicians to write with me and don't look like I could find nobody that was interested in do it. And then when I kept it at the house and me and my baby started writing, we started making progress.
That's amazing.
You know, sometimes it's right there sitting next to you. You don't even
That's usually where it is.
That's right.
I got to ask you a technical question. So what were you playing through for that guitar solo? Flying V?
I was using I was using one of Joe's flat V's. Joe got some, he got a couple of 50 Corona V's around that, what he had. I got a pretty decent collection of guitars myself at home, but by the fact that we did it in California and, you know, trying to fly stuff, so I took one guitar with me. I took a 58 Deluxe. Les Paul.
Yeah.
You know, it had the mini humbuckers in there. I took that guitar, and other than that, I played Joe's 355, and I played his Flying V, and I used a Stratocaster on one song.
Oh, that's cool. And what did you play? What did you play through? Did you play through? He's got some old Fender Tweed amps, right? Is that what you played through?
He had some of those, and he let me use a couple of his Dumble amps also for the solo. You know, I plugged straight into his amp and just, you know, use that for tone, and it seemed to work out quite well on the track, you know.
And you seem super old school, so I assume no guitar pedals.
No.
Yeah, on the guitar, on the hands, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. That makes sense. I can hear it. But I was just curious, in case there was a guitar pedal, I just wanted to know. But yeah, I assume that. Dude, it sounds amazing. Your songs have so much life, so much joy, so much soul, so much power. But man, I got to tell you, your guitar solos are ripping. I mean, it's like you rip through the track with your guitar solos every time. It's like, oh my God, it's just crazy.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. You know, and that's all I try to do. Like I said, you know, I learned a long time ago where my focus was at. You know, I don't try to be anything else. I embrace the blues. But yes. I hope that, like I said, the presentation is something that's close enough to the tradition, but yet far enough away to keep young people interested. We gotta keep the influence of the tradition alive and the flavor, the seasoning of the old school.
Absolutely.
But we got to keep it just progressive. We don't want to add too much. You know, it to me, it's just like cooking. And when you go to cook something sweet, you don't put a whole bag of sugar in one pie. You know what I'm saying? You know, there's...
Speaking the same language, man.
you know what I'm saying? So it's all about the seasoning. It's all about the seasoning and playing for what's best for the scenario.
And don't think
with that in mind, you know,
don't think
season on.
Don't Don't think I didn't miss that food reference in the first song. I like barbecue in my slaw, because that was a great line, man. I was like, that is just sensory. It gives you a sensory experience. And your music is just tremendous. It really is. You are really tremendous. I want to play something else before we run out of time. What are we going to play last?
All right. I got one other side I want to show, and that's my ballad. It's called Down to the Bottom. And it's just the old school, you know. I wanted to have a kind of a country flavor. And, you know, a lot of times you hear the, I hear the country song, Big Bad John, with the bass, you know, big bass note. Yep. And so I was saying to my baby, I said, I want to sing something that, you know, you can do that low thing on. So it was a song I come up with called Down to the Bottom. Way down to the bottom is where the good love come from. You know, you got to start from the bottom to have a good foundation and to build from that. And that was the concept.
I love that. Here's Larry McRae with Down to the Bottom.
Sometimes in life, you can't get what you want. Gotta learn how to make it on what we need. Sometimes in love, when a heart is broken, only way to heal it is to let it bleed. When love was lost, I was out there searching. I went searching, looking through the lost and found. But they say that good things always rise to the surface. But before you make it to the top, you gotta start from down. Way down, down to the bottom. To the bottom of the river where the still waters flow. Way down to the bottom of the river in the valley where the true love grows. We all go to work for things worth having, but things worth having aren't always what they seem. Life without love, well, it ain't worth living if all we're doing is chasing dreams. There's so much within me, way down inside, and somehow you're there too, where my deep emotion lies. Well, it started in the universe in which we reside. My soul knows your spirit, and this you can't deny. Talking about down, down to the bottom, to the bottom of the river where the still waters flow. Way down, all the way down, to the bottom of the river in the valley where the still waters flow. To the bottom of the river in the valley where the true love grows.
Yeah.
What a treat, man. What a treat to hear that. It was a beautiful song. Softer, slower side. A little bit more country. I love that. I love that.
Yes,
and what a treat it was to hear you and Warren Haynes trading solos. That was crazy.
Well, you know, I got a chance to, I met Haynes in the late 80s. I think I met Warren around about 1988. And at the time, I was getting ready to, it was a little, when I met him was then, but the session didn't come around until 3 or 4 years later. And the song Soul Shine was in some of the first songs that, he had submitted to me. I was introduced to Warren by, he used to be managed by a guy by the name of Doc Fields back in the day. And so Warren was a Warner Brother writer. But he was doing, you know, other bands, you know, he did Great Southern, he did David Allen Cole, he did a lot of other things before he evolved into being the Allman Brothers and then to the Government Mule.
Right.
But long story short, he gave me about 4 cassette tapes with all of what would become Allman Brothers hits later on, and he told me to go ahead and do any of the songs, and they were already produced to album quality, and I don't know why they weren't released, but he just had them. And eventually, you know, Greg Allman did a lot of the songs. And several other artists, once I did some of Warren's songs, and I did another writer by the name of Dave Steen. Hmm. And when I did their music then, you know, it was several other Chicago artists that followed suit that picked up on some of their songs, too, like Sun Seals, Etta James, Kenny Neal, Bernard Allison. You know, it was several other that, you know, went to those same writers, you know, after we had come out and, you know, showcased some of that music. And it was a good thing, you know, just a good thing to be in that. But I was the first artist to release the song Soul Shine. I didn't write it. It was written by Warren Haynes, but I put it out in, I think it was 91, I think it was.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then it come out with the brothers about 5 or 6 years later.
Yep.
So when it come out with the brothers, the people would say, well, you're doing an Allman Brothers song. I said, yes, that's correct. But we had been doing it 5 years, but, you know, we've been doing this song.
You gave me chills because that's one of my favorite songs. It's on the Back to Where It All Begins record. And to hear that you did it first, I'm going to now find your version because I got to hear it, man. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that we did that a few years before the Allman Brothers did, and on the Deep End, you know, the video from the Deep End.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice the credits on there, he gave me a credit as being the original artist.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Larry, you are a serious cat, and mm-hmm. I just want you to know, like, I'm so honored to have you on the show, especially to kick off 2023 on this show. We've had a lot of amazing musicians, but you are definitely up there as one of the top 5 best of all time. Thank you for doing what you do. Where can people find you online? Where can people find you if they want to book you and ask you to play festivals or tours?
You can find me at LarryMcRaeLive.com. And also, if you go to White Leaf Events, you can find me there. Or if you go to North Star Entertainment Roster, I'm right there also.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. We are going to collaborate on some music. I'd love to help you bring your old records back to a new life. And we're going to play some shows together because I just think you are a true American gem and just a blues phenomenon and so much more. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. I really appreciate it, man.
Brother, I would love to come and sit around your camp anytime I could. It would be nothing but an honor and a treasure to me. And I'm sure we have a lot of people in common
yes.
that we know. And it wouldn't be nothing but a big reminisce, a big good time. And we play a lot of music and have a lot of love. It's nothing Absolutely. But love, man. Music is the only denominator that neutralizes all this bad vibe that's in the world today. We got to keep pushing the music.
You know, my mom says musicians are the people that are going to bring the world to peace. And you said it. That is exactly it. And I'm going to tell you this. You have an open door whenever you want to promote something to come back on the show. You just let me know. I'd love to interview you again. I'd love to showcase any record you do. I'd love to help you in any way I can. I just think the world of you, and you really are something special. And thank you so much.
God bless you, brother. I'm so glad that we got a chance to meet. You know, sometimes things bring us together for a reason.
Yes.
And I think I just met a new lifelong friend.
Likewise. As soon as I saw you, I was like, oh, my God, I get to meet him right now. So it was just amazing to meet you then and even more so now. Thank you for being a guest. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being the blues artist that you are. And we're going to keep in touch and we're going to make a lot more music together, okay?
That's one thing for sure. Count on that.
All right, you get to sleep because I know it's late over there. On behalf of Larry McRae, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Happy New
Year. Love.
One love, absolutely. Blues power, blues power.
Blues power.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.